This digitizer data flow swirling through your radio. A smash, flash, drastic, splastic show called the Edge Up Radio Experiment. The sweet spice, super sizzle, sparkle, snow, an audio deep show by Van Gogh. So slide right up and say hello to the Edge Up Radio Experiment. Sonosphere, blasting past the last frontier, the Edge Up Radio Experiment. A Grand Slam, New Span, Glamboree, Flea Free, TNT, Glee, Times 3.
It starts out with an E.
The Edge Up Radio Experiment. What's the stitch that's a data flow swirling through your radio?
I think by now you should probably know.
The Edge Up Radio Experiment. So find a comfy place to stay, crank that volume all the way, cause right now it's
Lankers Away!
Edge Up Radio Experiments 2006 Halloween Spooktacular! I hope you have your security blanket with you.
And if you don't, go get it! Because I have some very scary stories for you tonight.
So light your jack-o'-lantern, grab your rosary beads, and pray that you don't die of fright while you listen to the Edge Up Radio Experiments 2006 Halloween Spooktacular!
Once upon a time, in an ancient village, there was a miserable man named Jack who liked to play his tricks. Jack's tricks weren't nice. They weren't nice at all. One evening in cold October, Jack invited the devil to a treat. Jack placed the ember in a hollowed-out turnip to carry it and to protect it from the winds and the rain. And from that day on, Jack roamed the earth without a home, with only his lantern lighting the way. That is why we light our jack-o'-lanterns on Samhain, to light the way for all the lost souls who are wandering in the darkness.
Ed, this is some great pumpkin pie! It's amazing! How do you do it?
Oh, I had a little help. So, what are you doing for Halloween, Lindsay?
Hopefully, getting married.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm going speed dating this weekend. I got an exclusive invitation in the mail for it. I'm going to meet 27 of the most eligible and successful bachelors in Manhattan. I don't think there's any doubt that at least a handful of marriage proposals will come out of it. Especially with these pumpkins.
Oh, my. All right.
So, what do you think of that?
It sounds good. Just be careful. You don't want to end up, well, you know.
What?
You don't know about...
What? Know about what? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Tell me what... Tell me what?
Okay. Tinswell Hammerton. You never heard about Tinswell Hammerton, did you?
Tinswell Halpert?
Tinswell Hammerton. She was a regular girl, not unlike you. Single, lived in the city, pretty girl, maybe even looked like you.
You knew her?
No. A friend knew her. Anyway, a few years ago, A bit before Halloween, in fact. She was invited to go on a speed dating expedition. It was held in a really swanky place. Some old dowager's apartment on the Upper East Side, or something. The woman who owned the apartment, who put the event together, she came from really old money. Her family had a chemical company. Supposedly, they sold poison gas to the Nazis. But that's never been corroborated. Anyway, no one saw her that night, but apparently she had all of Manhattan's richest families in her Rolodex because the cream of the city was invited to her speed dating soiree.
Ed, the big words again. I've told you, I don't like the big words.
Her party. Her event. A soiree is a party. Stop interrupting. Eat your pie.
So what happened?
Well, Tinswell, or Tinsy, which is what her friends called her, they also called her the Countess. Because she was a bit of a princess, you know? She went to the speed dating thing, and it was, you know, your basic kind of speed dating thing. You spend 5 minutes with one guy, 5 minutes with another, and so on and so on. The old woman had put out a small spread of pumpkin pie and juices. You'd think it would have killed her to put out some vodka or rum, but, you know, whatever. So Tinsy went from guy to guy, nibbling her pie and sipping some juice, and by the end of the night she'd dated, air quotes, 30 guys or so. And in fact, she had great success. She got phone numbers from every single guy, and she even gave hers to quite a few as well. When she left the apartment, she was elated, not to mention on a bit of a sugar rush from all that pie. There was one thing, though. When she looked through her cards of phone numbers, she was missing one, and she thought it was the one guy she liked the most. So in the cab ride home, she kept trying to remember the guy's number, mentally reciting combinations of numbers she thought might sound right. 565-4182-984-7136. You know, hoping that something would jog her memory. She got so lost in this reciting, in fact, that it startled her when the cab driver was basically shouting her fare at her.
843, miss!
Needless to say, hearing more numbers just confused her even further. So for the rest of the night, all she could think of was numbers. Nothing took her mind off it. Not reading, not TV, nothing. She went to bed and had crazy dreams all night. Everything to do with numbers. She was a calculator. She was trapped in an abacus. Crazy stuff like that. The next morning, she got up, exhausted and feeling a little queasy. So she thought she'd have some cereal for breakfast. She got some alpha bits from the cupboard, and when she poured the cereal bits into the bowl, they were all numbers.
That's odd,
she said. Except she then realized that she'd actually said, that's eight. And she kept making these same little word mistakes all day long. Like, the phone would ring and she'd answer,
zero?
Instead of hello. She thought it was strange, but nothing to be alarmed about. It's a little peculiar thing, you know, happens all the time. That night, she had more unsettling dreams. She dreamt of the guy from speed dating, whose number she'd lost. In the dream, he asked her if she could tell him his phone number. And she opened her mouth and outstreamed a bunch of random numbers nonstop.
3, 2, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 8.
At that point, she woke up, still reciting numbers.
8, 7, 6, 9, 2, 3, 1, 0.
Over the next week, she found out all she could think about was numbers. The little word mistakes happened more and more often. She would count everything. At night, she would stay up for hours tapping numbers on a calculator and reciting, as if she was trapped in some cosmic math problem with no solution. Soon, she stopped going to work at all and stayed in her apartment all day, reciting, tapping, counting. When friends called or came to check on her, she would only babble strings of numbers at them with a blank expression. Eventually, she never left her bed and was consumed only with numbers. Before long, she was committed to Bellevue and her apartment emptied out and sold. She stayed there a week, and then a couple of days after Halloween, someone, an old woman, I think, checked her out of the hospital to take her somewhere else, to an asylum upstate, I've heard. And anyway, she's never been seen since. But I've heard stories, one from someone actually leaving a speed dating event, who have been walking alone late at night on the Upper East Side, and when they pass a certain building, it almost sounds like they hear a woman, a haggard-sounding woman, reciting numbers feverishly. It's even been reported to the police, who had checked out the building, but never found anything. And that's the story of Tinswell Hammerton, the Counting Countess.
Wait, that sounds a lot like an urban fable.
Legend. The phrase is urban legend.
You know what? I think you're just jealous, because you weren't invited.
Oh, here we go. Okay, sure. Listen, I just wanted to make sure you knew the story. I just want you to be safe. You know what? I want you to go and meet a bunch of guys and get the remarriage proposals. That's what I want. There. Now, eat your pie. You've barely touched it.
6 1 5 3 8 2 1 1 7 4 3 8 9 6 6 7 6 7 7 1 6 1 6 5 8 1.
What did you say?
Nothing. I didn't say anything at all. Now you have a good time on your date. And remember, don't think of any numbers. Happy Halloween.
It's great to be here with you young witches on this fabulous night. Remember, girls, show the world. Let them know it's Halloween. Hit it!
I wouldn't.
The craziest night you've ever seen. This hairy, scary.
Hey, Tamala. Sorry I'm a little late. So are we ready to go?
Well, in a minute. I ran into Dennis on the street.
Dennis.
Yeah, he's inside. Said he'd be out in a second. Probably stealing something. So I'm just waiting till he gets out, and then we can, you know, say goodbye to him and go. It's not a problem, is it?
No problem. It's okay. Fine.
Hey, guys, what's up? Look what I got. Isn't it cute?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's cute. It's really nice.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. I also got this.
Where did you hide that?
I have my places. Anyway, stop monopolizing me. I have to go. I'm hanging out with Josh Brolin a little later.
Okay.
Oh,
sure.
Okay, yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Loser. I hate him. Everywhere we go, he steals something. I just know one day we're going to get caught and I will be thrown into jail. Jail, Ed. Jail. I can't go to jail with this badunkadunk. I can barely fend them off as it is.
Yeah, I don't think that's as big of a problem as you think. But, yeah, I totally understand about Dennis. I totally,
Is he ever going to stop with the stealing? I mean, really?
Well, shoplifters usually don't. I mean, until they get caught.
Plus, he is such a racist, and he makes me look like one, too. I wish I could just get rid of him. Rid of him for good. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna take him to Bergdorf or something. Someplace with high security. Then he'll get caught, learn his lesson, and it'll all be done.
But won't you be an accomplice, though?
Well, not if I'm far away when it happens, right?
Good point. But then, you know, it's probably just gonna be some kind of fine or something if he gets caught. Then he'll just return to the low-level shoplifting. And, you know, places like Bergdorf don't send you to the slave labor camps in the basement until, like, the third or fourth offense.
Slave labor camps? What?
Yeah, you have to go someplace more downtown, more out of sight.
Wait, what are you talking about slave labor camps under Bergdorf?
Let me tell you about someone I used to know. His name was Phil, and he was a lot like Dennis, stealing all the time, always embarrassing me. But I hung around him because he always knew where to find the best falafels, which is why I imagine you put up with Dennis.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. Not falafels, but it's something.
But secretly, I just wish he'd go away. You know, for good. Disappear. You know. I would sit and wonder, now how can I throw him off the Brooklyn Bridge without anybody noticing? Maybe if I had some kind of flame-throwing pigeons for distraction. But of course I would never act on those fantasies. I mean, the falafels were just too good. But then one day, he just took it too far. We went to, like, 8 stores, and he shoplifted at every one, and we came this close. See how I'm holding my fingers together to indicate a very small amount? We came that close to being caught. Or rather, he did, and I being implicated. And when that happened, you know, suddenly, good falafels just didn't seem all that important. So, since he was all high on his shoplifting spree, guess where we went after dinner?
Where?
A little market in Chinatown.
I don't understand.
Have you ever noticed, Tamala, that the people who work at those Chinese delis, all over town, even the ones where we live, you never see them when they're not working?
Well, that's because they all live in Chinatown.
Ah, yes. And how do people in Chinatown, as expensive as it must be, live on a cashier's salary?
Well, I guess some own their apartments, but I've heard, and I think it must be true, that a lot of families live 20 people to one apartment.
Exactly. It's true. 20 people to one little Manhattan apartment. And do you know how they manage to live 20 people to one apartment? And with no air conditioning at that?
I have a feeling you're about to tell me.
They're snakes.
What? Slave labor camps?
Snakes. They turn into snakes when they get off work. That's how they can fit 20 to an apartment. It's also why you never see any rats in Chinatown, not even in the subway.
Okay, I'm not saying that I don't believe you, but how do you know this?
Well, I kind of found out through Phil.
But if Phil told you, then he would never have shoplifted.
Oh, not like that. See, I'd heard it around, the snake thing. And it made sense, but I never had any proof. So that night we were out, I thought, hey, I'll take Phil to one of those Chinese markets. If the snake thing is true, he'll get caught shoplifting, because you know they have reptilian senses and you can't get past them. And I'll be able to see if there's anything to this whole snake myth.
So what exactly happened?
Well, it was the luckiest thing, you know. We finished dinner, and of course Phil stole the silverware and insulted the universe by singing Roxette in his ghastly voice. And when we left, I said, let's go through Chinatown. And Phil was actually really enthusiastic because he thought it would offer him unlimited opportunities to shoplift. So much did he know. So we're on our way down to Chinatown, and as luck would have it, we run into my friend Gary, who is this compulsive smoker, and also a big stoner. So I was sure that if he heard about the snake story, he would probably have forgotten, or chalked it up to having been really baked or something. So we're in Chinatown, and I'm like, oh, I have to get something from this market. Let's go in. And it's this huge market, so it's not only rich with merchandise, but it also has a lot of workers, you know, looking over the scene. So I go in and buy, I think it was a snack cake or something, and I finish the transaction, and Phil is still, you know, combing the shelves, looking around. So I tell Phil I'm done, and of course he's like,
wait, I think I see some stuff I want. Just give me a minute.
So I was like, sure, fine. And then, true to form, at that very moment, Gary decided that he needed another cigarette. So he went out front to smoke, and I went with him. So we're out front, and Phil's inside, up to his usual tricks. Well, I take this opportunity to make Gary listen to this song I was working on. So he's smoking away and listening to this song through the earphones, which is like 9 minutes long. I knew he probably wasn't going to want to listen to all of it. And then, suddenly, I hear Phil from the inside of the store saying something like,
I was going to pay for that! Let me go! Hey, guys! Ed! Come here!
And calling from us. I looked in, but pretended not to hear. I saw them taking him to the back room.
What did Gary do?
Nothing. He couldn't hear a single thing with the earphones on.
So, what happened to your friend Phil?
Well, we waited outside for about 5 minutes, and then Gary took off the headphones, because I guess he was sick of hearing the song, and asked why it was taking Phil so long. We looked in the store, but didn't see him, so I said to Gary, maybe he got caught stealing. I bet they took him to that room in the back there. And Gary was all hysterical, like, what should we do? Should we go in there? What should we do? What should we do? And I said that I didn't think that was a good idea, but I knew that with this particular building, you could go around the back and see in a little window they have to the back room, if you stood on a block or something to see. So we crept around back, and Gary stepped on the cement block that was lying around there and peeped in. He looked terrified, and he turned white as a ghost. He muttered,
"Let's get out of here."
Really quickly, and so we ran away. Later on, he told me what he'd seen.
And what did he see?
He said that the room, which was barely lit, and you could feel that it was really hot in there, was filled with snakes, and that they were digesting a body, a piece at a time, a body wearing the same garish clothes as our friend Phil. They'd somehow each broken off a part from Phil's body and were digesting it. You could actually see a leg in one of the snakes' bodies, and an arm in another, and what looked like an arm going in the mouth of another. But the creepiest thing was that there was one huge snake, the Queen Mother snake or something, that had a whole head inside it that you could see through the skin, which was wrapped really tightly around it. Phil's head, and it was stuck in mid-scream. Anyway, Gary said that he was paralyzed with horror, and that one of the snakes suddenly transformed back into a human being in the form of the cashier who I had just bought my snack cakes from. He became human, and when he was fully formed, put his hand in his mouth and took out a ring which Gary recognized as Phil's. It was distinctive, had a large ruby in the middle. So tacky. Anyway, he said that the snake-become guy had spotted him and was coming to the door, which is why we had to leave right then. Gary didn't know if the guy had seen us, but I did. I turned around and saw him out there, watching us. He just went back inside. It was no big deal.
You beast. But didn't people ask about Phil after that?
Oh, sure. But Phil was full of it. Always talking about spending a few weeks in Germany or London when he really just hung out somewhere in Jersey for the whole time. I was able to say, I guess he finally went to Germany. Or maybe he's big in Japan. And you know, no one thought much of it. I don't think people even really noticed. Gary, on the other hand, was a wreck. He couldn't get over what we saw. So I tried to convince him that it wasn't even real. That he must have been really stoned or something and imagined it. That things like that don't happen in real life. But he never got over it. And he started telling people the story left and right. It was really embarrassing, because of course everyone thought he was some crazy stoner, but the fact that I was central to the story, well, that kind of made me look crazy too. Or that I somehow arranged the whole thing. So that wasn't pleasant at all.
What happened to Gary?
Oh, so sad. Apparently he got some really bad weed just a week or two later. It must have been laced with cyanide or something, because he went really fast after just a couple of tokes. It was such a hard time. I spoke at his funeral, you know. His family was really glad to have someone lucid speak, and I really played up his good points. I even left a pack of camels, that was his brand, on his grave. It was really touching. You know, you would have loved it.
I love funerals.
Yeah. So I still don't know about the snake myth. I mean, Gary was a huge stoner, but... Well, you could try that with your friend Dennis if you want. You never know.
I think I just might. Ed, you are a lifesaver.
Oh, you. Stop. Well, I do what I can. Say, why don't we go down to that market right now? I actually get a little discount now.
Fantastic! It's going to be a great Halloween.
It sure is.
Once a year, on a spooky night, it's Halloween. what a fright.
Young boys and ghouls in ghoulish disguise, they cover the skin, conceal their eyes.
A great mistake to be held when the ghosts are about. It's Halloween,
a time to be on the rest of the world.
Tell them.
Ed, again, I'm so sorry to have embarrassed you like that in front of my friends. It's just that I want them to think I'm cool, you know?
Don't worry about it. Look, I remember what it was like to be in college. It's fine. We're cool.
Oh, good. If we run into them, though, could you...
Don't worry. I'll skedaddle. Not gonna cramp your style. That's not my thing.
You're the best, Ed.
Well, I try to be good to my friends. I love this part of campus. Hey, maybe you know. Is that the building where all those kids, you know, jumped?
Yeah, creeps me out. I'm in there all the time. Thankfully, I've never wanted to jump.
Well, you've never had jumping clothes before. Oh, but now that you work at Urban Outfitters, you've got jumping clothes.
Whoa, don't even joke about that, man. That place scares me. I wonder what made all those kids do it.
Well, you know what I heard.
What?
A long time ago, a long time, that used to be a botanical garden type place. This rich old woman owned it, but it kind of fell into disrepair, everything overgrowing and all. It was 10 stories tall and had all kinds of plants, vines, flowers. And strangely, what it had a lot of was this hybrid Chinese patchouli in the center of the ground floor. It stank to high heaven because the building circled upward with an open balcony over it so you could smell it from everywhere in the building. Unfortunately, because the exhaust fans for the building were on the roof, you could also smell it all throughout the neighborhood. It reeked, and the neighbors hated it. The city actually offered the woman a lot of money for her property because it was such a nuisance, but she never would sell. Then one time, the city came to her to make another offer, but instead of talking to the woman, who happened to be gone that day, they spoke to her husband. Now, he never knew about the other offer, so he was really excited. He was much younger than his wife, and everyone said that he married for money. Anyway, he told the city that he would have to clear it with his wife first, but he thought prospects looked very good for a sale. He told his wife about what happened later that night, and she flew into an indignant rage and refused to sell, belittling him for even bringing it up and threatening divorce. Okay, the next day, the husband traveled to Indiana to procure some special plant food or something for his wife, something very out of character for him. He was gone for 4 days, and when he returned, city officials were waiting to see him immediately. The smell from the building had grown much, much worse over the past few days, absolutely unbearable. They demanded that he sell the building immediately or it would be condemned. So he went to the building, thinking that since it was daytime, his wife would be there, tending to the plants, and he could talk it over with her. When he arrived, though, he found the door locked, which was unusual. You know, if his wife was there, why was the door locked? Anyway, he unlocked it and entered with the city officials. There, he found his wife's body laying in the huge circle of patchouli. She was half decomposed, but half preserved, where her body had absorbed the oil from the patchouli plants. She was discolored and strange-looking. She appeared to have fallen from the top floor, in spite of the high railing. Well, that day, her death was ruled a suicide and the property sold by the husband. The city then incinerated the plants and demolished the building. The husband, who everybody suspected of murdering her, was treated like a local hero, and soon thereafter he married a much younger woman and moved away. And after the smoke was gone, the god-awful smell was no more.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the jumpers?
I'm glad you asked. You see, every few years or so, there appears an old woman in the neighborhood selling fragrant oils in the park. She's really mysterious. She wears, like, well, she wears a hooded smock or something, and her skin has these weird greenish patches. And while she sells fragrant oils, there's really just one that anyone ever buys. An aged patchouli with a smell that has really become kind of legendary. It smells sort of like patchouli, but much more complex, much better, actually. Spicy, floral, leafy, like millions of flowers and leaves and all kinds of things. It's like nothing you ever smell. It washes over you. It's like a narcotic or something. Time stops. It's like a trance. Anyway, she sells this patchouli to college kids. Like, you know how they love their patchouli. And because she's selling illegally, you know, she sets up in a booth in the park with no permit, the cops always shut her down. But when they turn to arrest her, she's gone. Poof. She always manages to get away, and nobody knows how. She's like the Flash Gordon of patchouli. Okay, so back to the jumpers, finally. Every time somebody has jumped from that building, the police and paramedics have always noticed a certain odor at, the site. Sort of like burnt-up plants. You know, very faint, but a revolting, disturbing smell. It makes you... It's very unsettling when you smell it. But get this. When the coroners search the students' rooms for clues after the fact, the one thing they find in every room is a bottle of this weird aged patchouli. Now, it happened that one of the coroners had heard the story of the woman who sold it and how the scent was legendary. So he took the bottle and he uncapped it and he smelled a bit of it. But he was shocked to find that it had the same rancid, rotten, burnt-up smell that he smelled at the sight of the student's death.
Wait, so magic patchouli made the kids jump?
I don't know. Who can say? Anyway, it's just a silly story. That patchouli woman, who I guess is supposed to be the ghost of the Botanical Garden Dowager, she probably doesn't even exist.
If she did, you know, there'd be more of this amazing patchouli oil around. I mean, this woman must have sold it to someone who never opened the bottle or gave it away. There could be dozens of bottles of that all over the city. But we're not seeing mass patchouli-induced suicides. I think it's a hoax.
Yeah, you're probably right. Still, it's a fun Halloween story. Would you be able to go up in that building on Halloween night? I kind of doubt it. You'd be scared to death.
Scared? Yeah, scared of all the book zombies studying nonstop. That alone could make you jump.
So, what's your costume for tomorrow anyway?
You'll see. It's a surprise.
Okay, whatever. Hey, you know what? Why don't we meet in that building on the top floor?
What about security?
On Halloween? I hardly think it's going to be a problem to get past a library's security guard on Halloween night.
Okay. I'll see you tomorrow then. On the top floor.
See ya. Oh, wait. I almost forgot. I made a Halloween blend for you. It took me a while to find the main ingredient, but here it is. Smell it.
Wow, this is great! What's in it?
Oh, you know, the basics. Ginger, anise, sandalwood, jasmine, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to give the whole thing away.
No patchouli, right?
Hey, does it smell like smoke to you? No, it doesn't have any patchouli. Spooked much, Frady Cat?
Ha ha. So are we going to meet there at 8:30?
Yes. And wear the oil. Maybe some of the book ghosts will catch a whiff of it and come back to the land of the living.
Zombies. Book zombies, I said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. So we'll see you tomorrow, then. Anyway, I can't wait to see how you look. Happy Halloween!
Yeah. This right here is a true story.
All real. All real.
Make you open your eyes on deception and lies. The devil and God.
Yeah.
Look, make you wonder. It's real or it's not. You ain't scared, are you? Hope not. Halloween 2004, stepping out the front door. I should be in church, but I'm a voice in my head. You choose. You wanna live or end up dead.
Oh, hey, guys.
Dude, I can't believe you almost played that at the party the other night. That was hilarious. And when I said, what year is it, 1999? Dude, everyone was laughing. Woo!
Yeah, they were. You had the last laugh there. So, hey, what are you guys doing for Halloween?
Check it out. We're gonna go down in the subways and find the mole people. Mole people. Yeah, I'm gonna find the mole people.
What? You know the mole people don't exist. That's just a myth, like parachute pants or free breadsticks and salad.
No, they're real, and we're gonna find them.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, you have fun down there. Try not to step on any third rails on your way back.
Dude, we're gonna do it. Remember that rat you saw at the 8th Street subway station yesterday? Well, it ran down to an entrance to the sub tunnels. We saw it after you got on the train. We're gonna go down there on Halloween night and scare some more people. Yeah.
Yeah.
8th Street.
Yeah, it's gonna be wicked! Woo! Yeah! More people!
You're really gonna do this. Look, this is a bad idea. You should forget about it right now. It's dangerous down there. People get hurt, killed, going down there.
I thought you said there was no more people. Why were you...
I know what I said. I was hoping to dissuade you from doing something stupid and dangerous. You don't know what goes on down there.
What, and you do, Smarty Pants?
You know, why don't we leave my pants out of this? But yes, I do know. I had a friend. One Halloween, a few years ago, he and a couple friends had the same idea you did. Go down the tunnels, scare some indigents, have a great story for the kids, for the friends, all that. So one day, we were eating at one of those Indian restaurants on 6th. You know, the whole block is just one Indian restaurant after another, all with identical menus. I think we ate there a couple days ago. Anyway, after dinner, we headed home, and I felt like taking the train at 8th Street. Well, I saw what looked like something scurrying down an entrance to a lower tunnel. Bigger than a rat, smaller than a polar bear. I never should have mentioned it. And they saw it and followed it down the tunnels. And they realized that here was an entrance they could use to the sub-tunnels. They planned to go the following weekend, but I talked them out of it. Or at least I thought I did. They went without telling me the next Saturday. Sunday, I got a call from my friend, who was in the hospital, and sounded a little hysterical. So I rushed over to see him and see if there was anything I could do for him. I get there, and he looks bad. Not verge of death bad, but exhausted and a little clammy, a little beat up. I went in his room and sat beside his bed in silence for what was probably like 5 minutes, must have been. And then finally, he started to open up and tell me what happened. He said that he and two friends went into the subway the night before. He said it took them some time to get through the grates or open the locks or whatever it was, but they made their way down to the tunnels and started to explore. The one friend, we'll call him X, he had a flashlight. He led the way down the tunnel. It was X, Y, and my friend, Z. He was the last. The tunnel went in only one direction, seemingly east, my friend said. They didn't see any people in the tunnels, just some rusty equipment and old graffiti here and there. This was a regular tunnel. There weren't any tracks, so they could walk wherever, and, you know, no danger of a third rail or anything. They got maybe 50 feet down and hadn't seen much of anything, just a couple of places where it looked like someone might have been living before, but had long before abandoned. They were about to turn back when suddenly they smelled a really strong odor coming from further down the tunnel. It was kind of like curry or something. So they decided to go forward and investigate. They went a few yards down, and the tunnel abruptly curved and ended a short way ahead, where a large grate revealed an even deeper recess in the tunnels. X, Y, and Z crept up almost to the grate's edge and crouched. From the cavern below, they could hear a flurry of activity. It sounded like a factory, and every now and then steam would waft up through the grate and fill the tunnels with that nauseatingly strong smell of curry and spices. It was almost unbearable. At this point, they were pretty scared, but they also had to know what this place was. My friend insisted that after taking one quick look, they all return to above ground, and everyone agreed. So they all crept up to the edge of the grate silently and looked down in. What they saw was horrible and almost impossible to believe. It was a huge kitchen. Hundreds of workers tending to these gigantic vats of various Indian dishes. Curry, vindaloo, basmati rice, and at least a dozen tunnels split off from the cavern. They were messy and looked like they'd been dug by hand. The workers scurried in and out of them with huge buckets of food siphoned from the vats. My friend knew instantly what they had come across. The Mono Kitchen. The fabled food factory from which every Indian restaurant on 6th Street got its food. No one had ever been able to prove its existence, or prove its existence and live. But here it was, stories underneath the city, and they had found it. Now the workers in the Mono Kitchen were bizarre and ghastly. They were cadaverously pale. Some were albino. Some looked human, but others looked like some kind of odd beast that might have been human once, but had devolved into something else. Some were clothed, and some weren't. They moved around like giant ants, going automatically from one task to another. And there was a series of guards perched atop the kitchen, watching over the operation, keeping the workers in line. Now at this point, my friend and his buddies were deathly afraid, so they slowly backed away from the grate. And they might have escaped if one of the workers below hadn't have spotted them and let out a ghoulish shriek. Suddenly, the factory below erupted into chaos, and all the guards leapt toward the grate. My friend raced toward the tunnel, my friend first, followed by X and then Y, and the guards behind. The guards overtook Y, and one almost caught X, but he shined his flashlight in the monster's eyes, and it ran away, shrieking. My friends reached the end of the tunnel where you'd go upward, when out of nowhere, one of the creatures leapt in front of my friend, getting face to face with it. He only saw it for an instant, but he said he'd never forget the sight. The creature looked mostly human, but it had weird, grayish skin. And membranes had grown over its eyes, which you could still see were involuntarily moving and blinking underneath the membranes. It had long fingernails, which looked more like claws, and reeked of rotten curry. My friend said he was sure he was about to be killed, but then suddenly X pushed past him and tackled the beast, beating it with his flashlight.
No, run! I'll be right behind you!
He said. And so my friend climbed out of the tunnel and escaped, unscathed except for a huge scratch the beast had inflicted on his arm. All the way, he could hear his friend scream until he reached the subway. He ran out on 8th Street and just ran madly in any direction. He didn't remember where or how far. Somewhere along the way, he must have collapsed, because the next thing he remembered was waking up in the hospital.
Dude, what happened to him?
Did he end up being...
Was he okay?
Well, interesting that you mentioned that. Oddest thing it was, the doctors treated the scratch, and there seemed to be no infection. It looked like it healed, but his general condition deteriorated. He kept losing color in his skin and became largely unresponsive. He grew thick nails and couldn't tolerate bright light very well, and his speech devolved into a series of grunts and shrieks. The doctors were mystified. They had never seen it before and couldn't figure out what was happening. Oh, wait, there was one. They called in a specialist. I think he was from India, and he said he'd seen this condition before, and that he knew a treatment and my friend would probably be fine after a few days. So he spent some time with my friend discussing the incident and, you know, getting a medical history and all that. And he put my friend on a weird cocktail of drugs and a blood transfusion IV. Anyway, the morning after the specialist saw him, a nurse went into his room to check on him, and he was gone. Apparently, he'd escaped, fled the room with his IV still in. But since the tube had broken or cut or something, it leaked and left a trail. The trail led down the hospital stairwells, all the way down to the sub-basement, a locked area where medical waste was stored. It was a labyrinth of catacombs, and no one really ever went down there. And some tunnels even led to the sewer and to places that people had long forgot about. The trail of blood ended in that room, at a locked entrance to one of the tunnels that had been out of use for decades. Somehow my friend had been able to break the lock, even though just a few hours ago he seemed weak and very, very sick. On the ground at that entrance, they found the remainder of the IV, so the trail ended and they couldn't go any further. My friend was never found, and to this day no one knows whatever became of him. It's a shame, too, because he owed me $50. I still think of him whenever I eat in an Indian restaurant downtown. So, the point is, stay away from those tunnels. Things happen down there that you're better off not knowing. So promise me that you won't go down there. You do not want to go down there. Promise.
We promise.
Promise.
Okay, we'll go down there.
Scouts on.
Scouts on.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a relief for me. Thanks. Thanks for your honesty. I know that you really wanted to see that, but trust me, you're better off. Anyway, I'm sure you guys can find something cool to do for Halloween. So, yeah. I'm sure I'll see you later. Give me a call. Bye, guys.
Okay, yeah. Bye.
WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.